This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on July 1st, 2010. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good afternoon. The open session for Thursday, July 1st, 2010 will now come to order. First item on the agenda is the approval of minutes for June 10th, 2010. Vice Chair, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of agenda document 1036, the minutes for the meeting of June 10th, 2010.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Next item on the agenda is discussion of audit policies and procedures. Vice Chair, I understand we have a number of late submitted documents.
Yes, we do, Mr. Chairman. I move we suspend the rules on the timely submission of documents so we may consider documents 1030A, 1030B, and 1030C.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. The three documents that we have on the agenda, one is a policy that establishes a pilot program for requesting consideration of legal questions by the commission. We also have a directive on the processing of audit reports, as well as a directive on legal guidance to the Office of Compliance regarding the policy statement. This is something that we've talked about and been working hard back and forth to try to reach a conclusion on. I think that we are close to, I think we're at a place where we have a comfort level on how to proceed. But is there any discussion or questions about the policy documents that we have before us? No discussion. Do we have any motions? Commissioner McGann.
Chairman, I move. Can we move all three documents in one motion, Mr. Chairman?
I'd rule that in order.
Okay. I move that we adopt agenda document number 10-30-A, 10-30-B, 10-30-C, and authorize council to make any technical changes, grammar, whatnot. Sometimes those pop up typos.
Vice Chair.
Just a friendly amendment. I believe we would need to ask the staff director's office to make technical conforming changes with respect to the directives. They would, in particular, need to be numbered appropriately in accordance with the rest of our directives.
Okay. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In my time at the commission, I've seen blue documents that were labeled 959 on a meeting day, 1003 on a meeting day. This is kind of a first, 2:51 p.m. on a meeting day. We've spent the last 24 hours hashing out language on these documents. The directive on processing audit reports has been something we've been talking about for a long time, largely motivated by the problem that we've had in getting four votes for things. We're deadlocking on more issues than the commission has in the past. In the past, we didn't need a special process for what we do when there aren't four votes for audit findings. It would happen once in a while, but it didn't really necessitate a special policy. But now it's becoming more common, so we needed a policy to deal with it. And we've been grappling with that for quite some time. And as a result, our audits have been backing up while we've been trying to figure out what the wording of this policy is. And then fairly late in the drafting of that process, there were other issues that were added in, issues related to the other, what we've now separated out into two separate directives. The FEC directive on legal guidance to the Office of Compliance, I think, is, I can support it. It's it largely codifies processes that our staff have recommended and have already put in place. I think it's frankly unnecessary. And wasn't worth the time we spent on it, because it's an internal management issue and we can easily address those without having a big formal public adoption of a policy. To the extent it It codifies some deadlines. I yield to no person in my long-standing commitment to timeliness at the agency and imposing deadlines where necessary. I think they're an important management tool. I just don't think we needed to do it through the issuance of a public directive. But I can support it because I don't have any substantive disagreement with it. The policy statement establishing a pilot program for requesting consideration of legal questions by the commission is the one we spent the most time on today. It's what caused the delay in the meeting. We were told that we could not do the others without this. I still don't know why. This was considered so critical. I think, you know, it may present a mild improvement in commission processes, although personally I would I think it would be improved if the requests were triggered by the agreement of four commissioners rather than two. I think given our track record on deadlocking, having two commissioners indicate an interest in something is not necessarily a good indicator that we'll be able to resolve the question, and it would be far more efficient at the front end to at least determine that four commissioners were at least interested in responding to the question. It may allow us to settle some issues at an earlier point in the audit process, but I'm really not sure what we're opening up here or how many questions we're going to get. I'm glad that we were able to do this as a pilot program. I could not have supported it otherwise. But even so, as I said, I think it could be improved, and I don't know why it had to get done today. We needed to address the audit policies because, as I said, we've got a backlog on the audits and we need a way of moving them through. But this, I think, was not necessary, and particularly on a day when we are codifying some policies that address timeliness. I think if we really want to address timeliness in the agency, we need to lead from the top. And we are not, we don't have a very good track record on that. Ballot deadlines are routinely ignored by commissioners. We have cases that were dismissed over a year ago, and there are still no statements of reasons explaining the commission action. So if we're worried about transparency, I think that, you know, that would be a good way to improve transparency. And most important to me, we still have, we are almost roughly 4 months out from the election, and we still do not have the FIA or the coordination rules in place. And at this point, for all intents and purposes, that coordination rule is not going to take place until the next cycle, because it is only addressing things that happen outside of a time window within proximity of the election, and very shortly we're going to be within that time window. So, you know, basically, we didn't have a coordination rule in place for this entire cycle outside of the window. I think that's appalling, and it was avoidable. There have been proposals on the table on both of these things for months, and I don't actually think this is one that we can't agree on. I don't think either one of these things are issues that we can't agree on. I think we can agree on them. I think there is a path to rules, and that is where we should be focusing our efforts. That is the issue above all that people are looking to us to provide some guidance on, and that we have spent as much time as we have spent on these minor procedural matters. You know, I'll support them, but I just think that this day was a whole big waste of time and that we really need to refocus our priorities and do what people expect us to do. This commission is very concerned with process documents. We love to issue process documents, but I think what the public expects of us is to make substantive decisions. And we have, as I said, we don't have a good track record on that. I think we could do better. I think it's an achievable goal. I don't even think that some of this is caused by irretrievable differences that we cannot come to agreement on. I think we can. And I think we could have done it months ago. And I think we're all very tired. We've been working very hard. I was looking at these documents until about 1 in the morning last night, and we spent all day hashing over language. And in the long run, I don't think that any of these things are going to be nearly as important as getting our regulations done, which I certainly hope we're going to be able to do soon, though we have, 3 controversial and difficult AOs on the next agenda, so I don't know if we'll get it done on the next agenda. I really think, as I said, if we want to say, you know, this is an agency that's committed to transparency and efficiency and timeliness, we need to set a better example from the top. And I'm personally embarrassed and very frustrated at what we've been spending our time on recently.
Any further discussion? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Turning to actually what we're considering here today, I find it disappointing that some may think that this is a waste of time and that they are embarrassed, because to me what is a waste of time was what happened to the AFL-CIO, which is, of course, the second item on the agenda. But that's really what prompted what we're doing here today, among other things. The idea that we spent all day on this, that's certainly true, but let's give some context to this. Where to begin? Long before I joined the commission, there were a number of audits which would come before the commission which would cause the commission pause. And generally they turned on legal issues. And when I joined the commission, there were quite a few of those. We had a hearing a year and a half ago. We got comments from practitioners and others concerned, and some of the comments suggested that it might be helpful to have an ability to, when dealing with legal issues with the reports analysis division or the audit division, since they are not lawyers and they are those divisions are designed to do other things, a way to have issues, legal issues decided by the commission before the process continues on a flawed path. That, of course, was a year and a half ago, and until today, no such procedure has been introduced. There have been a number of audits since I've joined the commission, and I really am not sure I'm on the same commission, because we talk about deadlocks in audits, but there's been a number of audits, and there have been some 3-3 votes on certain audits, but there has been audit after audit after audit after audit. We're not three, but four, five, and sometimes even six commissioners have rejected the findings of the audit division. Not because the auditors are bad auditors, not because they're not professional, not because they don't know how to do an audit, not because they're not experienced, but really over legal issues where they've received some guidance along the way internally, but usually it's in an area of evolving law, for example, federal election activity with state and local parties. That seems to be one theme. But certainly to say that, oh, there's been deadlocks and that's why we need these procedures, simply is not an accurate reflection of what has happened in audit. Missouri Democratic Committee had an audit. There was a situation where the auditors took the position that ads run in an off year that referenced a gubernatorial candidate were somehow federal election activity. Majority of the commission said they were not. There's been a number of other audits since, some of which I've been recused from. I was in private practice before I joined the commission, so firsthand I dealt with audit and illegal issues come up. But there have been others more recently. Friends of Meenor was a committee. Four commissioners disagreed with the audit division. We've had a number of recent oral arguments in audits where my sense is there are probably a majority of commissioners that don't necessarily agree with the position of audit. And this is not new. This has happened over the years. If you read old audits, years and years ago, really since the commission began, I went back and I actually got a copy of the Jimmy Carter for President audit, and I read it start to finish. And what is old is new, and what's new is old. And even then, the audit division would recommend legal theories that the commission would not necessarily adopt. This doesn't mean that there's deadlocks or things are bad or that kind of thing, but it means that the commission needs to step up and do something about it, and that's what we're doing here today, because then we come to more modern era with the AFL-CIO, and I'm going to not spend a lot of time on it because it's the next item on the agenda, but what is a waste of time is the fact that The way they were raising money for their political operations was questioned, as it should have been under guidelines that the commission approves, and it was questioned, but they raised a legal question, and they said as a matter of law, they were doing it correctly. This went on for years and years and years, resulting in an audit. The audit went on for quite some time. And then it finally made it to the commission, and it made it to the commission really because of an oral argument or oral presentation, whatever one wants to call it, procedure that this commission put into place, and I think has been very helpful. And it turns out that the AFL-CIO had been audited, 30 years ago on the same issue, and the commission had not only green-lighted it, but the commission seemed to have write the actual procedures for the AFL-CIO to follow. All this is water under the bridge, but my concern is that this does not happen again. And what we're doing here today, I hope, goes a long way to ensuring that does not happen again. Because the folks who work here put in much, much too much time to continue to be lampooned and beat up by those on the outside. I certainly, as one formerly on the outside, was one of the biggest proponents of blasting the staff and saying this and that. That's what lawyers do, but now that I'm here, I've seen from the inside, and it's amazing what you learn from the inside. And it seems like audit gets blamed for things that are legal questions. RAD gets blamed for things that are audit questions. OGC gets blamed for things that are audit questions. And there's a lot of this. So I think it's important that the commission take responsibility for this, because ultimately we're the ones that bear the ultimate responsibility for everything that goes on here while we are on the commission. I certainly agree with Commissioner Weintraub that to the extent that someone thinks we're not doing things fast enough, that's the commission's fault. And the commission needs to do that, and the commissioners need to work through things. But let's not paint with too broad a brush, because as we all know, the way the commission is constituted, we rely heavily on staff recommendations and the way the vote procedures work. Notwithstanding the statute saying it takes four votes for the commission to do anything, over the years it has really evolved that unless you have four votes to stop the staff, they really don't stop, because the commission's already approved the action and it just could take on a life of its own, which becomes unfortunate because then long-term and very professional auditors get blamed for things that really are not auditors' fault. It's really a question of what the law is. And that's what we're here to do today, is to allow people to talk via paper in certain limited instances to the commission. This is not designed to allow folks to create what I would have called sort of a habeas corpus jailhouse lawyer practice, where they challenge everything the reports analysis division does or what audit does. It's supposed to be limited to legal issues that are novel, complex, the sort of things that the commission needs to decide, and that's really all this does. This doesn't allow for folks to file all sorts of things, and in fact, we are trying to do as least violence to the current staff practices as we can, meaning to the extent you can work out things informally with the respective staff here at the commission, you can continue to do that. We encourage you to do that. Those who do that seem to fare much better. But there are times where the commission need to decide questions, and that's what this is designed to do. And procedure is important because it controls so much of the substance, and the way issues are framed before the commission matter. And the AFL-CIO audit illustrates this in droves. If you look at the public record on the AFL-CIO file, you will see letter after letter from their counsel, very long, very legalistic letters addressed to the reports analysis division. Most of these folks are young folks, in their 20s and their 30s, and they follow a large binder that the commission gives them as when they review the reports. They're not the sort of folks that can engage with sophisticated counsel making rather sophisticated legal arguments. That's something the commission needs to do, and that's what I hope this is going to do today. It's certainly the intent. In case someday someone listens back to the tape and they wonder what something means, hopefully they can listen to this, what I said, and take at least what I think it means. It's not designed to open up all sorts of new avenues to challenge what the staff's doing, but it is designed to address a very specific concern that has been raised time and time and time and time again, and hopefully this at least allows for some folks who feel that they have a legal issue that the commission needs to hear. And that goes for whether you're in an audit or you're whether in the reports analysis division, because they send a number of letters questioning reports, as they should. The law is quite clear with most disclosure issues, but occasionally there are issues that come up. Sometimes things spill into the newspaper. Recently, there was an incident with a political group where they questioned a letter regarding how they were supposed to report certain spending, and it's not an easy issue. That's all I will say. But there is no process in place for them to take that issue to the commission. Now there will be, assuming it fits into what we're doing here today. So I don't want to drag this on too much, Mr. Chairman, but I think it's important to give some context to this. And realize that this is something that really should have been done years ago, but has not. At least a year and a half ago, this commission was told by a number of folks that this would be a good idea. It took the unfortunate test case, I guess, of the AFL-CIO to bring it to a head. And let's not forget, sometimes you look at the AFL-CIO and related groups, and you think it's a faceless group that has unlimited resources. They do not. The AFL-CIO are actually people. You know, it's a labor union, obviously, but it's not just a labor union. It's a federation of a number of unions, both domestic and international. And at the end of the day, they are teachers. And well, not teachers. The other union members are teachers, police officers, firemen, and that sort of thing. We got to remember that we actually are not just doing this in some academic theory, that real people are involved here. And when real people want to bring something to the commission, they ought to be able to bring it to the commission, and I don't think that's a waste of time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on the motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
I mean, this sort of gets into a little bit of what we're going to be talking about next, but the everyone regrets what happens. Everyone at the table, I'm sure, regrets what happened in the AFL audit. But the problem is that this procedure would not have changed that result at all. The problem in the AFL audit was that we lost track of a document. It wasn't a legal, the legal arguments were presented. We actually had an opportunity to review them at the interim audit phase, and people were not persuaded by the legal arguments until, thank goodness, the AFL, at the very end of the process, they didn't even know this document existed, found the 1979 audit. Everyone agrees. We should have found the 1979 audit at the get-go, but it was 30 years old. It was down on microfiche, and we didn't. And I think we have instituted other procedures, actually, to make sure that we look at old the history of the case. And that actually is, I believe, addressed in one of the other documents, and the FEC Directive on Processing Audit Reports, which actually was pretty much done this morning. But and that's good. You know, obviously we should look for the earlier precedents, but that was a factual problem. We didn't have the facts. We didn't have in front of us the 1979 audit. In fact, the AFL didn't have the 1979 audit. They knew they'd been doing things a certain way forever, but they didn't actually realize that they had been doing it on our direction. And remarkably hadn't changed that process over the course of 30 years. It's unfortunate that we lost track of a 30-year-old document, and that nobody remembered 30 years ago what happened, but it was 30 years ago. I can't remember it ever happening before, that we lost track of something like that, and I know nobody wants to see it happen again. But that was the clincher. It was finding the document that made it all clear and persuaded everybody that that had to be the result. Without that document, the legal arguments, you know, and having a process for the legal questions to be presented really weren't going to do any good. You know, I recognize that it was in some sense prompted by the frustration with that case, but in fact, this document doesn't address the problem. Wouldn't have helped. You know, it's a small good thing. I'm going to support it. I just think it's not, shouldn't be our top priority right now.
Commissioner McGann.
I must be mistaken, because all the letters that the AFL sent into the Reports Analysis Division, I take from your comments that they were considered and rejected by the commission. So the commission knew about this and actually rejected the legal arguments at that stage. Is that what you're saying?
We had the opportunity to review those documents throughout, yeah. Those documents are certainly available.
Oh, okay. So just so we're, the blood is on the hands of the commissioners on that one. That's interesting to know, because that's not the impression I got from reading the public file or the private file. On the contrary, there, I can find nothing in the commission procedures which would have brought that to the commission, and nothing in the commission folklore, anecdotal, formal record that says it ever went to the commission, but you're telling me the commission did reject it. That's good to know. At least we know who's accountable for this. I'd be curious to see the vote on that. I'd be like, maybe you can send me the certified vote on how that went. Turning to the audit document, in addition to the legal issues, we're also putting forward hopefully a coherent statement on audit reports and how audits work. There was a vote of the commission in 2006-ish that was done in executive session regarding whose document the audit report really is. And this is a longstanding issue with the commission, and the commission voted, at least what the vote says, is that it reflects the views of the commission. That seemed rather obvious. But to make that public took some work, and now this other item, these other items on the agenda are designed to help flesh out what that means. The auditors are going to have the full opportunity to present their position. I think it's important. Originally, I wasn't so sure about this. I thought maybe it wasn't so important, but some of my colleagues, particularly Commissioner Walther, persuaded me that the public really ought to know the procedural posture, so to speak, of the audit. So we're going to know what the auditors recommended. We're going to see how the commission voted. One thing the commission has done over the past several years, which I really had escaped me until recently, was the audit reports themselves really don't note the vote of the commission. But if you go back to the older audit reports in the 90s, the Bob Dole audit, for example, which I have here, the Quayle audit, I have a whole file here of audits, they actually, in great detail, go through what happened. The auditors recommended this, it passed the commission 6-0, or the auditors recommended that, this failed by a vote of 3-3, second motion, and it actually breaks down so that people get a sense of what was really adopted and what really wasn't adopted. And I think that's very helpful, and I think the format that we're setting forth here today, I think, is going to provide more information to the public, not less, about what's going on, so that folks see whether or not, for example, there have been more deadlocks on audits or not. But looking at the audit reports currently, it's impossible to tell. Now we'll be able to see exactly who's voting for what, which I think is very important. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have, unless there's further discussion on my motion.
Any further discussion? Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to, since I have to leave early, I'm going to make it, I'll make it short anyway. But I do want to support this enthusiastically. I think it's a part of a chain of effort, of the results of an effort that have happened in the last, I'd say, 18 months to try to open the agency up, to make it more transparent to people on the outside, to give us the opportunity to at least hear and hopefully listen to what people have to say to us about the issues before them. When I first got here, I was told that people on the outside say that the penalty is really the process here. They do that for a reason. Unless people think they're being heard and heard in a timely manner and had their matters considered fairly, then it doesn't really make any difference when we get to it, and if the people outside don't think we're being fair, and we're not considering their situation. So over the years, the last several months, we've provided hearings before for audits, for hearing for advisory opinions, for pre-probable cause. We've spent a great deal of time issuing a guidebook so that the people on the outside can understand how this Byzantine operation really works in terms of the way it affects them. Previously, if you do the regs, you have no idea what happens in here. So I think all of this makes us for a better agency. It makes us more responsible. This is another step. In this particular case, what it does is leave somebody who might languish before audit or RAD for a long period of time with the uncertainty as to how it's going to go in terms of where the legal direction will be. So in theory, it could happen that someone finds themselves engaged in expensive work. RAD and audit may not know exactly how the commission is going to land on something, so they may they do their best, but they're we're certainly not a predictable operation. What it does is it gives somebody the operation to reach us at an early stage. We can listen to the issue, try to give guidance, hopefully as good as it would be at the very end, and shortcut what otherwise could be a very difficult process for everybody, including our staff. I think it's a good thing. I heard Commissioner Weintraub and I understood the concern over what will this do. Will this have a floodgate of people who will now be asking us in the early interim stages for legal advice to come clear to the commission prematurely? But I think, especially in terms of the audits, which is where I see the issue mostly coming, I was reminded by Commissioner McGann, and I was very concerned about this issue earlier on, still am, about the number of audits that we do. But in fact, we only do 20 or 30 audits a year at the most. 20 or 30 audits a year, I'll say that again. Doesn't that surprise everybody? What kind of a real deterrent can this agency have in terms of audit if that's all we do? And that's all we do. And I think we should take a good hard look at how we expand our resources to deal with that. So we are a true deterrent agency. Oftentimes, we increase our thresholds so that less audits come to us, and we still don't have the resources to actually audit those that qualify for an audit. So taking that into consideration, I really don't see how many questions could come to us that would really clog up our operation, flawed as some people think it is. And then secondly, it has a provision in there where the legal question has to be somewhat limited. It can't be just any legal question, but it has to be a significant moment. And I think that's where the commission should really come into play here. It's not a run-of-the-mill issue, but something that's very important that may be novel for which there's no true good guidance here in the agency or from the outside. And last, which we have, is a situation in which we deal with a deadlock. If we can't agree within 90 days, audit continues to do what it would do. And RAD, same way. They will continue in their process knowing that the agency still has not given formal advice, but they can at least proceed with their own charge. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this works as a pilot process. We might tinker with it as we go along, but I think it's a good step.
Any further discussion? If not, motion's on the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes 6-0. We'll turn next to the report of the Audit Division on the AFL-CIO COPE PCC held over from a previous meeting. We'll have a presentation from the Audit Division. Mr. Hindermeister.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before you is the final audit report of this AFL-CIO COPE. The audit report includes two findings. Finding number one is the misstatement of financial activity for the years 2005 and 2006. The committee filed amended reports to correct the misstatements identified by the auditors. Finding number two involves the transfers received from separate segregated funds. During the audit period, AFL-CIO COPE received transfers of $1.1 million from two separate segregated funds. The interim audit report questioned whether the AFL-CIO COPE and two separate segregated funds were required to meet the transmittal and record-keeping requirements for collecting agents. In conjunction with the hearing before the Commission, counsel for AFL-CIO COPE submitted a 1979 report of the Audit Division on the AFL-CIO COPE, which included recommendations that are consistent with their long-standing reporting practices for the transfers. As a result, the audit staff accepted AFL-CIO COPE's current reporting practices. We can answer any questions that you may have.
All right. Thank you very much for that presentation. Any questions or discussion? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I when this came around for a vote on the tally vote paper system, I objected to this because I went back and took a look at the history of this, and without getting into specifics, I'm happy to do so if someone wants to know them, but I don't think it's necessary today. If you take away the issue regarding the fundraising that was present in the 1979 audit, and then you take a look at how the AFL-CIO ended up being audited, there's no secret that reports out, analysis division reviews reports, and that there is a point system. We don't have random audit authority. We have to audit essentially for cause, and it is the standard the commission has developed over the years. And without getting any more detail than that, if you take this issue away, they would have not been audited. And because they would have not been audited, I cannot support a finding in an audit that, in my view, should not have happened in the first instance. All that is left is a misstatement finding. Some may say, well, gee, we can't just turn a blind eye to that. I would suggest that we're not turning a blind eye to that because, first, it's already on the public record because we've had an oral argument in an open meeting. We're talking about this here today, so there's no secret that the AFL-CIO's reports needed some fixing. But more importantly, they've done the amendments, as I understand it, and that they've taken the action on that issue that the auditors have recommended. So the public record is intact. Their reports, I think, are satisfactory in the view of our auditors, and given how long this has gone on, and it continues to go on recently, in large part because of me, because I've objected to this. So I basically apologized to the AFL-CIO the first time, and I'll do it personally this time for holding it up because justice delayed is justice denied. But I thought it was worth it because in this particular case. And hopefully it never happens again, and I certainly don't see this as a motion that will be used in future audits. I see this as its own situation. Mr. Chair, I move that we terminate this audit and leave it at that.
Any discussion on the motion? Vice Chair.
I agree with my colleague that I don't expect that this will happen again. I guess I'm not sure of what a terminate. The audit has happened, whether we like it or not. And I think it would, from my perspective, it would be most clear for the public record to state what the conclusions are, adopt a report that says they've materially corrected the misstatements and there's no further action required with respect to the other. And we have now a new procedure document. If these need to be described as other issues rather than findings or things like that, perhaps we could talk about that. But it seems to me that the fact of the matter is the audit has happened. It is actually finished. So it's kind of all, I'm not sure what you're meaning by terminated, because I think it is concluded. I appreciate that you want the record to be very clear that there's nothing left of these issues, if I understand you correctly, and I appreciate that and think that's important, but I'm not sure what terminating means in this context. And we did just adopt a procedural document that I think could accommodate, I think, what I hear your concerns to be.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, in my view, what we just passed does address this because the AFL-CIO would have an opportunity to raise the issue sooner, and the idea that the federal government couldn't find its own audit report is troubling. I don't think we can find MER number one either. I think that because you said you're not sure it happened. I cannot find a copy of MER number one. I'm really curious to know what MER number one was about. And Commissioner Walter's right. There's not a lot of audits each year. I think that number goes up with the taxpayer money audits, convention audits, and that kind of thing. So it kind of goes every 4 years. There's more and less. But I think there's been 900 audits in the history of the commission, over 6,000 MERS. So I think I share your concerns that if for compliance purposes, it's really this side of the building that can do wonders if given the resources. But turning to termination, it's the best word I can think of. My concern and what I really can't do is vote for a finding against the AFL-CIO. If there's a way to not make it a finding, that's fine. But I could certainly anticipate folks saying, but gee, there still was the misstatement on the reports. We ought to make a finding. I understand all that. For me, however, I see it as what they call in the criminal law, fruit of the poisonous tree. Once it's tainted, and to me this is tainted to the point where it taints the future findings, And the public is going to know what happened. They made the amendments. Maybe terminate is not the right word. It's the best word I can come up with, because it seems like something that won't happen again, probably won't happen again. So the motion hopefully will never be made again that it asks for terminating an audit. But it's the best I could come up with to avoid actually trying to vote for findings or one finding that I cannot support.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think perhaps I maybe wasn't clear. I was referring to the procedure that we just adopted with respect to creating final audit reports and the flexibility that that gives us with respect to other things, like instead of if a finding is not going to have four votes, it seems to me we could call these things additional issues as this new policy contemplates.
Commissioner McGann.
You're right. The policy we just adopted I guess could address it. What would look weird, though, is there'd be no findings in a whole other issues section. I certainly agree that the commission has issues. Thank you. I rehearsed it. Did it sound forced?
It was good.
Okay. But maybe that is the way to do it. We adopt the report and just put it in the other issues section. That's maybe achieves the same thing. I guess that works, right?
Vice Chair.
I would anticipate that we could ask the auditors to reflect that this is not a finding, and if it's, since others suggest something else and there's no other, maybe it's just issues. I agree the commission has lots of issues, but it seems to me that it was only funny the first time. I didn't expect that.
It's okay.
I didn't expect that. So that I think that from my perspective would provide the clearest understanding of the end result here, which is that they have resolved all of the issues raised by the audit, whether that could have been avoided by,
the issues maybe we have resolved today with the first item
perhaps
on the agenda.
Commissioner McGann.
That sounds fine by me. If maybe you have an amendment to my motion to sort of trump it and figure out how we can land this. Or do we actually vote on the finding that's presented? That's my concern. I'm trying to avoid voting on the finding that's recommended and not go through that rigmarole if we don't have to.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Well, first of all, I just want to clarify. Now, are we going to issue a finding that says that they were right about on the other issue? Because I would think that would be satisfactory after the end of all this, that we would issue something that formally said the commission agrees you were doing it right all along.
Commissioner
McGann,
as long as we promise to all keep a copy, so 30 years from now everyone remembers.
I don't promise to personally
maybe with electronic files now we can, the next time 30 years from now we'll remember the commission voted.
And that actually is a great thing that that we have done, that is productive, and we're back to 1994, I think, in terms of the audits that are now up on the public record, which is a good thing. And I only say this because you asked, Commissioner, but otherwise I wouldn't belabor the point, but the interim audit report on AFL and on COPE was on the agenda on July 14th and 15th, 2009. Legal issues that had been raised by the by AFL and COPE were presented to the commission at that point, and the minutes of those meetings say that those audit matters were approved by a vote of 6-0 on a tally vote basis, certified before the meeting and removed from the agenda. I recognize that, and we didn't have the 79 audit in front of us, or we probably would have come to a different conclusion at that point. But I only say that because you asked for the cert, so there it is. That's when we voted on it. And I think we all found the 79 audit to be very persuasive. But as I said, I'd like to find a way to formally acknowledge that they were right all along. I think they deserve that from us. I don't know how we terminate something that we've already ended, but I think that putting it in additional issues is an appropriate resolution.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You are right. It went through on interim, but just to clarify what that is, that's a tally vote. And the policy of the commission now, because I think we clarified it, was at the interim stage, it goes through on a no objection basis now, because frankly, I was confused as to what these reports were, because I've been confused since I've gotten here, which is a whole other topic. Mr. Calvert's frantically flipping through his notebook in anticipation of me raising the Sunshine Act, which I'm not going to do now, but it's odd that part of the audit is behind closed doors. The interim stage is in executive session if we have to consider it, but then the final is in open meeting. We've had other issues in audit come up in executive session, which seem a lot like what we discuss in open meeting. So I understand it did go through the commission, but what did not go through the commission was briefing directly from the AFL-CIO. What comes through on the interim stage is merely the interim audit report before it goes out to the AFL-CIO to respond to it. So the position I have taken, and this may help put some context to this, is if it's really an error, then I will argue to stop it at the interim stage. But if it seems like it's the sort of issue that is not inherently obvious, and this issue is certainly not inherently obvious to me, because I am certainly not well schooled in the nuances of how the AFL-CIO and as a federation raises money, I will vote I will not object to an interim report, because I will want to hear briefing from the AFL-CIO. So although it did go through on interim, the AFL-CIO briefing does not come in until after. Now, one could say the public record with the RAD letters and whatnot, none of that is attached to the actual vote. I tried to look at those things. I may have looked at it in this case. I may not have looked at it in this case. But the reality is I don't want to be in a position where, and I don't think you're suggesting this, where I need to stop audits at the interim stage to fight every legal fight. That's going to take all day, because when I get talking, I can really get going.
I've noticed that.
Yes, yes. And I haven't really mentioned all the Supreme Court cases this week that have come down, and not just the RNC case, but all sorts of other cases that talk about agencies and accountability, and you know, the Sarbanes-Oxley case about the SEC, that board that they had that was struck down. All kinds of great language I can read out. I'll save it for another day. I have all new ammunition from this week that I can use when I get ahead of steam. But I'm going to nip this in the bud, and I don't want to be put in a position where I have to stop things at interim stage and fight the legal fight before they have a chance to brief it. In this case, though, this began long before the audit, and that's the stage where this should have been confronted by the commission. And that's why the termination made sense to me. I can support a motion that is to not adopt the findings as suggested by the auditors with respect to the misstatement, but find an appropriate finding regarding the issue with the old audit, and what the AFL-CIO is doing is actually proper and consistent with what the commission said 30 years ago. So I can support that motion, but I want to be clear about what is the interim stage and that sort of thing. So thank you,
Mr. Walther.
So moved. I want to try it.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Just to make sure that I'm clear on the second point, the audit report currently says that under these circumstances, the audit staff accepts AFL-CIO COPE's current reporting practices. Do I understand as part of your motion that you would that as when this is goes through and is reworked and consistent with the new policy that we've adopted, the new directive, that will more clearly state that that the commission deems that what they were doing was legal, not that
right.
We just accept it, but that we actually say that their arrangement was a legal
right.
arrangement.
My motion, I think, is that that's a finding.
It's his motion.
And
he moved it.
Oh, to character. Since I'm feet. Okay. So as Commissioner Walther has moved, I think what he's moved is, since he's so moved, what I said. That becomes a finding of the commission, and if I had my druthers, the reporting issue would be moved into the other issues section.
All right. Any further discussion on the motion? If none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Next item on the agenda is really the companion case to the AFL-CIO COPE. It's the CWA COPE report of the Audit Division.
And Mr. Hintermeister, are you on that one as well?
Sure.
All right. Thank you.
Before you is the final audit report for CWA COPE. The report contains one finding. It's the transfer to AFL-CIO COPE. During the audit period, CWA made a transfer totaling $300,000 to AFL-CIO COPE, as discussed in the prior matter. The interim audit report questioned whether CWA COPE was required to meet the transmittal and record-keeping requirements of a collecting agent for these transfers. In conjunction with a hearing before the Commission requested by AFL-CIO COPE, a 1979 report of the Audit Division on AFL-CIO COPE was submitted, which included recommendations that were consistent with the longstanding reporting practice for the transfers. As a result, the audit staff accepts CWA's current reporting practice.
Thank you. Any discussion? Commissioner McGann.
Can I incorporate by reference to the prior agenda item, Mr. Chairman, and make the same motion?
If everyone understands that?
Commissioner Walter can say so moved.
So moved again.
All right.
There's no additional issues.
There's no additional issues.
Because they didn't have the misstatement?
No, but the finding would be characterized in a manner consistent with how we were characterizing the finding in the earlier audit.
So moved.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Secretary.
For clarification, who made the motion? I heard one and then a so moved and another so moved. So
wants
just
to
for
take
the
credit.
Record.
I think that one was me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
Commissioner
the first
McGann.
One was Commissioner Walter. Last item.
Thank you.
Next matter on the agenda is the report of the Audit Division on the Tennessee Republican Party federal election account. Mr. Soltz?
Alex can't be with us today, so
okay.
I'm pinch hitting.
Yes, Vice Chair.
I apologize, but as I mentioned this morning, I have to leave now, and so I just can't wait. I apologize. I've talked to Commissioner Bowerly, Vice Chairman Bowerly, about where I think things are going to go, and I assume that's probably the way it's going to be, and if it doesn't, then that's the way the chips fall. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Stoltz.
Final report, Tennessee Republican Party, and we have four findings. The first is a misstatement, which is a two-part finding. Part one has to do with the original reports filed versus amended reports filed. They were off significantly. The committee filed amendments 20 to 75 days later. They objected to this finding because they said they were given advice that it was better to file something than nothing, and though that may be true, I think they still have an obligation to file a complete and accurate report. The second part relates to our audit of the amended reports. Those were also off by smaller amounts, as indicated in the reports. Amended reports have been filed to straighten all these issues out. Contributions from unregistered committees. These sorts of contributions require additional information to assure that are made with permissible funds. That information was lacking. Some had been refunded, though untimely, and when offered the opportunity to demonstrate that the contributions were made with permissible funds or to make refunds, they chose to make refunds. Third issue had to do with possible coordinated expenditures. It deals with a direct mail program on behalf of the party Senate candidate. The party had no coordinated spending limit left since they had assigned it to the National Committee. The mail program was more than $700,000 and was questioned based on the content and the use of the same vendor as the candidate for similar mail programs. However, the committee contended that the mail program qualified for the volunteer materials exemption. If, of course, if that were the case, the other two questions were moot. Based on the guidance by, provided by Commission Actions on this sort of issue in the past, the Intermodal Report requested the committee demonstrate that sufficient volunteer involvement existed to qualify for the exemption. In response, the committee explained how the volunteers were involved in the mailing. Based on Commission previous decisions, that involvement would have not been sufficient. However, after the Intermodal Report was approved, the Commission considered similar circumstances in MIRA 5598, Utah Republican Party. And in that case, the Commission neither accepted nor rejected the claim to the volunteer exemption, but noting the complicated history of this provision, decided not to pursue the issue as a matter of prosecutorial discretion, while noting the need for further guidance in the area. Based on that decision, the report concludes that there is no need for any further action by the committee. And the final issue had to do with disclosure of salary and wages and the need for records to support how various staff members spent their time. Those records were lacking. They were able to produce some affidavits for some of their employees, and for the remainder, they filed a minimum report showing them as federal activity. None of this caused the committee to overfund from the non-federal account.
Thank you for that presentation. Any discussion or any questions? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to move it along since we're here late in the day and cut to the chase. The basis of my objection was on the what I'll call the volunteer mail finding, which is finding three, titled Apparent Coordinated Party Expenditures. A couple thoughts. First, in the discussion in the audit report on page 11 at the bottom, where it talks about the coordination rule, content and conduct, which is correct, and it talks about the content standard, but then it concludes that these pieces meet the content standard since the disbursements were for a public communication that expressly advocated the election to defeat of a clearly identified candidate for federal office. But then it says, although there was no language such as vote for, defeat, or defeat in the material, the audit staff determined that it could only be interpreted by a reasonable person as containing advocacy of the election of Bob Corker for Senate or the defeat of Harold Ford Jr. For example, one of the direct mail pieces contains a picture of Bob Corker and discusses his plan for securing the borders and cracking down on illegal immigration on one side. The other side is a picture of his opponent and states, among other things, too bad, liberal congressman. Harold Ford is all talk, no action on illegal immigration. Another direct mail piece pictures Congressman Ford and notes that when he, quote, did show up to vote, he voted against the recent tax cuts for Tennessee families. The piece also states that he is, quote, Tennessee's most liberal congressman. To me, setting aside whether or not 100.22b is still good law and all that, circuit courts have struck it down. The commission's perpetually tied up in knots on it. And as with virtually anything else, I'm always happy to have that discussion, but I'm not sure folks want to have it this time of day. To me, an easier way to get there is to use, I think, the reference standard within a certain time window. It seemed like this mail piece was all pretty close to this material was all delivered pretty close to the election. That's another one of the content prongs in the coordination reg. The reason why it's really not that big a deal is I think the committee had sufficient volunteer involvement, and once that happens, it really moots out whether or not it was coordinated. It makes it not an impermissible coordinated expenditure. So for me, that paragraph in the audit report ought to reflect a little bit different legal analysis. If others disagree, to me, that the pieces in question are issue pieces. They're not express advocacy, even under 100.22b. I guess reasonable people can disagree, and that's why the reasonable person test has not fared all that well in various courts that have considered it. But setting that all aside, the real punchline is I think that there's sufficient volunteer involvement here. Curious as to the citation to MIRR 2559, which I think was from 1983. I guess the MIRR database is much easier to search, so I guess the 1983 MIRRs are easier to find than other documents. And then the 2288 MIRR years and years ago before technology changed, and really before the commission in a number of MERs revisited the issue of volunteer mail, not just the Utah Republican Party MER, but I think the Missouri Dems and the Pennsylvania Dems lay out some guidance. The Utah Republican Party MER is one in which I was recused, but there. Majority of the commission said that they would issue some guidance. We've put together a policy statement some time ago. It hasn't moved yet. It's the time of year where people are really going to start doing this, and to the extent we think we need to give people guidance, we probably ought to, because without, Mr. Chairman, mixing apples and oranges on the agenda, the next item up on the agenda also raises volunteer mail, but it seems like the language in the audit report treats that differently. I'm sure there's an innocent reason for that, but reading it with the cold eye just on the record, it seems like we're treating similarly situated party committees differently, in that the next item on the agenda acknowledges that the law is not particularly clear. So we have the auditors telling us the law is not particularly clear. So that means we probably need to provide some guidance, hopefully sooner rather than later. But for me, It's volunteer mail finding. It's the express advocacy discussion, I think, can be swapped out for the other content prong, which I believe is satisfied, and the discussion of the MERS. I think we should beef it up a little bit and include the other MERS that are on the issue, because I think those are relevant. Creates the false impression, I think, not intentional, but I think a reader who reads this cold could make it look like the law was one thing, and then just recently, you know, within the past year, the commission did something different. This was a long time in coming. It was a series of MERS before most of the voting commissioners in the Utah Party were even, Utah Republican Party were even on the commission. So that's a long way of saying I can support the rest of the audit report, but if we could modify that finding in those matters in that way and find that this was a sufficient volunteer component, and therefore not an excessive coordinated, that's my preference. Others may disagree, and then I can anticipate an easy fallback motion to move it into the other issues section.
I too support that motion. I agree that I think on the express advocacy can always be kind of a thorny bush into which to dive, and I think that there's a much easier way to get there on the 109.21 and of our regulations, C4, which refers to public communications that reference a federal candidate within 90 days of a congressional election. I think that's none of us are going to disagree on that, and so that may just to swap the discussions, I think that would be helpful and avoid a potential point of contention. And I too agree that that under especially the Missouri Democratic Party and Pennsylvania Democratic Party MERS, that the volunteer component in this was undertaken by the Tennessee Republican Party was sufficient to qualify for the exemption. And for that reason, I'd be willing to support that motion as well. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can support half of it. I'm certainly happy to swap out the coordination analysis, which that's fine, but and easier. Easy's good. I think this case is closer to the Utah Republican case than it is to the Missouri or the Pennsylvania case. And in the Utah case, we didn't actually determine that it was sufficient. We dismissed on prosecutorial discretion. And I probably would not be willing to say that this was sufficient either, but, you know, we can move it to additional issues. It's late. I don't want to have a protracted argument about it.
Commissioner McGann.
That's what I was anticipating. You know, I kind of read the MER and I read the facts, and I can see why the auditor cited to Utah, because it is somewhat similar. I didn't vote in Utah. As I said, I was recused. I didn't actually represent that state party, just so the public record's clear. The public record shows I represented the mail vendor who produced, printed up the mail, and was involved in getting the volunteers to do it. But for me, this audit, this is enough. These volunteers touched every mail piece. They applied nonprofit indicia postage to the various mail pieces. To me, that's enough. Technology has eliminated a lot of the role for traditional volunteers as far as sorting and that sort of thing. You really can't show up at the post office with mail so that you sort it yourself. You really have to let machines do it nowadays. And what I would hate to have happen is that folks who do it this way can't, but those who actually, in my view, do less volunteer component, which not to, again, mix up the agenda items, but the next audit, they don't seem to have a lot of volunteer component. But to me, the Democratic Pennsylvania committee and the Democratic Missouri, I don't think that had a lot of volunteer component, but it's sufficient. I think this is actually more volunteer component than those MERS. But we've had this discussion before, and reasonable people can have reasonable disagreements, and I think this is one of those cases. But I hope we can come up with something that we can agree on, so people in this election cycle trying to do this and involve volunteers in the political process somehow know what they can and can't do without some specificity, because we don't want folks doing it one way and another way, and then after the fact in a MER judging who did it right and who did it wrong based upon, you know, a patchwork quilt of MERS. So maybe that's for a future day, but I anticipated where you'd be coming from, so that's why I kind of already indicated support for the fallback.
Move away.
So if you. To clarify, the fallback would
Thank
be.
Thank you. Doesn't get a little hoarse.
Okay, no problem. The fallback is to, which I believe we all have an agreement on, the coordination analysis to, instead of using express advocacy prong, use the reference prong, and then with respect to the volunteer mail component, that basically we have a stripped down discussion consistent with the way we. Discuss the volunteer mail component in the Washington Democratic Party audit, which consisted really of not really making a fine legal point on anything. I think it was a description of the facts and then a conclusion that
it speaks for itself.
That there's confusion and a lack of clarity in this area of the law.
Just one point of discussion.
Commissioner McGann.
Any chance we make a finding that the pieces in this audit were not express advocacy?
I thought we just heard that nobody could disagree that they fell into the that other prong of coordination rule. So why do we need to do that?
Because the content prong is different prongs. One thing I didn't mention earlier when you said we didn't have a coordination rule all cycle, we do, because express advocacy is year-round, right?
That is true.
Right?
That is true.
And then with primaries and all that, the windows were kicking around for a good part of this year. This is the reference of federal candidate within a certain time period, whereas the express advocacy prong, the auditors are taking the position that these mail pieces constitute express advocacy. I'm asking any takers on finding that this is not express, that these are not express advocacy. Doesn't change the coordinated mail, the coordination analysis conclusion, doesn't change volunteer, no, it's just that particular thing. Any takers?
Seems irrelevant then.
So it's moot. Just irrelevant. They'll have to make a finding.
Well, I thought we had just agreed we weren't going to make a finding on that because we were going to substitute.
Okay,
the
I was just late in the day. I thought maybe, you know.
Not that tired.
Okay.
Does everyone understand the motion, Vice Chair?
Does the motion include adopting the other findings? I'm just trying to understand where we're going here.
Yeah, I don't think that was actually stated.
Yeah, I don't think it was.
But
I just assumed it, and yeah, I'm sorry. And adopt the remainder of the report.
May I just clarify? So we're going to adopt the remainder, all of the findings except the one with respect to volunteer materials. It will be moved to additional issues and modified to do as described here at the table? What is happening?
Right. And with respect to the other findings, you do this in a format consistent with the policy we just adopted.
Yes.
Right. This is all new to us. Sorry.
Okay.
You understand? Does that make sense? Clear as mud.
We'll find out.
Okay.
Yes, you will. As a matter of fact.
All right. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 5-0. Next matter on the agenda, which I think we'll be able to dispose of in very short order, is the report of the Audit Division of the Washington State Democratic Central Committee. Mr. Hintermeister.
Before you use the final audit report of the Washington State Democratic Central Committee for the 2004 election cycle, the report has four findings. Finding number one is the disclosure of disbursements. The audit staff identified 68 disbursements totaling approximately $1.8 million, which lacked or inadequately disclosed the required information. In response to the interim audit report, The committee filed amended reports that sufficiently disclosed the required information. Finding number two was excessive contributions made to federal candidates. The audit staff identified six contributions to three federal candidates that exceeded the limitation by $6,103. In response to the interim audit report, the committee resolved all but approximately 2,700 of the excessive contributions. In finding number three is the misstatement of Levin activity. A comparison of the committee's reported Levin activity to Levin bank accounts identified misstatements of receipts, disbursements, and 2004 ending cash on hand. In response to the interim audit report, the committee amended its reports to correct the misstatements. In finding number four is the reporting of apparent independent expenditures. The audit staff identified 10 disbursements totaling approximately $600,000 for apparent independent expenditures made by the committee that, based on the available documentation, were reported on the wrong schedule. In response to the interim audit report recommendation, the committee amended its reports to correct two of these transactions totaling approximately $90,000. For the remaining eight transactions totaling approximately $515,000, the committee filed amended reports disclosing them as volunteer exempt activity on Schedule B. The committee was unable to locate any documentation regarding the volunteer participation with respect to these communications, given the lack of clarity at the time of these communications regarding the amount of volunteer involvement needed to qualify for a volunteer exempt activity. No further action is necessary.
Thank you for that discussion. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have, separate and apart from whether there was sufficient volunteer activity, I have another issue with this. I'm not troubled by findings one and three, which basically say there were errors that were corrected. But I have a concern about finding two and finding four that say that they either, you know, didn't resolve issues or that they were unable to locate documentation because, without rehearsing the entire sad history of this audit, we are now past the statute of limitations. And one of the purposes of the statute of limitations is to ensure that people are not put to the challenge of trying to prove things so far after an event that there is no longer, you know, people can't remember things and the documents have been lost. I mean, that's why we have statutes of limitations. So I have a really hard time making any finding against them on the basis of their inability to come up with documents or sufficiently clear recollection this far after the events, and in fact after the statute of limitations period is over. Now, I'm pleased that we have made changes to our processes to ensure that we will not run into this, I hope, again. But I just, you know, we could put it in additional issues, I suppose, but I'm not willing to vote for any kind of a negative finding at this point in time based on the statute of limitations.
If I could just ask a quick question, that was with respect to finding number two and finding number four?
Two and four.
Okay, because the way I read four was less that there was a finding being made, that there was any sort of determination. It does recite what the facts were and that they couldn't, the party wasn't able to locate any documentation, but it didn't seem like any fine point was put on that. And that after going through the facts, then it says, given the lack of clarity. But I
don't even want to rest on the lack of clarity and the legal standard on this. For me, it's just a statute of limitations issue.
I'm not
surprised that they couldn't come up with evidence at this point in time. You know, I think they had an affidavit that said, somebody said, well, gee, to the best of my recollection, there was substantial volunteer activity. I don't want to say whether that's, you know, sufficient evidence or not, but, you know, I'm not really surprised that they can't recall very clearly at this point in time, or couldn't even at that point, which was fairly, not all that long ago, fairly removed from the events.
Any further discussion?
I could make a motion. I would move that we approve findings one and three and move the discussion of findings two and four to the additional issues section consistent with our practice that we have adopted today.
Any discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion passes 5-0. Ms. Carmona, do we have any management or administrative matters?
We do not.
All right. Vice Chair.
Sorry. One point of personal privilege. I know it's late in the day, but I've had a legal intern with me for about 6 months now, and last day is today, and after 6 months at the Commission, she's bound and determined to be an election lawyer and a campaign finance lawyer, so clearly we have not done our job, but I wanted to just publicly thank her for all of her work. She's been invaluable to our office.
Right. Notwithstanding our best efforts to drive her away from the field today, right. So...
even after today.
All right. Well, if there's nothing further, everyone have a very nice and enjoyable 4th of July weekend. Meeting is adjourned.